out of 10 proctologists recommend listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
I went to the crossroads, fell down on money.
This is a little song dedicated to a mutual friend of this next guest and mine, George Strombolopoulos, big fan of Robert Johnson, king of the Delta Blues. Hey, we're in the studio with Kim McLaren. Kim has endured now 2.5 hours with me and has already called her therapist.
Twice.
Thank you again for being here. It's so nice.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Has it been?
It has.
It is kind of fun hanging out with me, isn't it, Paul? Isn't it fun hanging out with me?
Oh, absolutely, especially in those posh accommodations.
Oh, man, let me tell you a little story about that. I've got so many stories about this guy. First of all, I like him. And one time at Bandcamp, he was out, I don't know, some speaking gig, and I offered to drive him from point A to point B. And we drove through back roads and back roads and back roads, and it was dark.
Orangeville. Wasn't it Orangeville?
Would you stop? Stop it. And he doesn't know there's a town just over the crest of the hill. And we turn the corner, and we turn into, like, the Norman Bates Motel. I mean, this is a scary, dodgy-looking place. And Paul just rolls with it. He's like, oh, is this where I'm staying? Okay, good. And all he said was, well, I bet you they don't have Wi-Fi. And he goes to get out of the car, and I had to grab his arm. Go, no, just kidding, dude. And then he went, oh, my goodness, thank you.
True story. Yep.
Mr. Paul Young, listen, I know the definition of you these days comes with the word the shack. Are you still okay with that?
Oh, absolutely.
The shack shadow.
Whatever. You know, I wasn't looking for it in the first place. So, you know, it's one of those things where people tell you their stories, and how cool is that? So, yeah, I'll keep that moniker the rest of my life as far as I'm concerned.
You are a walking story machine all on your own. And then, of course, as you've just intimated there, you come across all these people who share tons more stories. So over the course of the next 15 minutes, Paul, I'd love for you to start thinking about a couple of stories that you'd like to share, because you're going to do it anyway.
Sure.
Okay. The scary thing with the follow-up to The Shack is people love The Shack. Well, some people hated it, but most people love The Shack so much. They were so emotionally intertwined with the story and the story behind the story.
True.
That I wonder if they were scared to pick up your next book for fear of it not being what that was. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, a publisher was.
Okay.
Can you do it again? So, you know, it's one of those places where I'm so glad to be in the headspace that I am and the heart space in terms of my relationship with God, and that is, I believe that God is good all the time and involved in details. And one of the things that it took me a long time to get to was finally getting to the place where I was living inside the grace of just one day. I don't understand anymore all that future tripping stuff and all that imagination that we spend today's grace on. And so it's about learning how to hear and respond and live inside the grace. And you only get it for one day. Everything else is just sheer imagination. And our whole world's built on that. So, you know, the publishing world and the book world, all that stuff is smoke and mirrors for the most part. And so, you know, when the opportunity came up, or it was part of a larger conversation to do one book with Hachette, which is the company that took The Shack internationally. And, you know, I said, okay, sure. Because that's what I felt in my heart, but we didn't have a title, we didn't have a concept. So I said, sure. Within 2 weeks, 7 languages bought it. Right?
Wow.
It's like, it doesn't exist. And, okay. And I'm thinking, all right. I just felt in my heart that that's what the Holy Spirit was saying, was say yes. So I said yes. And now I'm going, okay. Now, and here's where I got to very quickly, which I'm, again, so grateful about. And that is, I said, you know, God, if your purposes are actually better served by me falling flat on my face in front of the world, I'm in. I'm totally in. Because, you know, I've spent my life as a religious kid trying to get God to follow me, and I'm really done with that. It takes too much energy and what I found out, I think, is that God usually says, if you're going, I'm going with you on your adventure, but I'm not doing anything. I mean, just give it your best shot. And so we do, and we end up manipulating people and doing all this kind of stuff. So I just like to respond. So I did. And I had a year to do the novel. It was due August 8th, 2012, the first draft, first manuscript draft. It was supposed to come out spring of 2013. And so, you know, I'm doing whatever I do. And then I finally felt, you know, it's time. Somebody gave me a place to use down at the coast in Oregon. And I went down there for 11 days. And 11 days, I wrote about 35,000 words of an 80,000-word novel for Crossroads. And I had it done in the middle of April. I was, how cool is this? And wow. It's really beautiful. It's turned out great. It's a great story. It's a totally different story. But it's got an incredible response.
Okay, so, Paul, how is it similar? How is it different? Can you concisely throw those down?
Sure. So the Shack is about a likable guy inside a horrible event in his life. And it is, you know, basic questions that I'm exploring in that one is God good all the time and involved in the details? And who is this God? What's the character of this God? So that's the Shack. Crossroads is about a despicable human being. So I'm exploring, because I'm not an agenda.
Wait a minute. I never gave you permission to write about me.
Well, you know, you have to, it's a composite. Only part of me is in it, too.
Okay.
So Tony's a despicable human being, and the question in that book is, so if somebody is resistant to change and grace and doesn't want relationship for whatever reason, some valid and some not, how does God get inside of that defensive system that we have? And so this was just an exploration of one person's life and how change. And Crossroads becomes, you know, it becomes a metaphor for those places that we experience every day, but sometimes in big ways where we lose a job or we have an affair that exposed or we have an addiction that's exposed. And it says, are you going to stop now and pay attention to how you're living your life? Or are you just going to just keep barreling through and damaging yourself and damaging the people in your world? So that's sort of it was a different book.
Sure. Okay. I'm not going to do this justice, but when I used to tell people about your book, and I still do, I'm going to do what I do when I tell people about your book, and then I want you to do what you do when you tell people the same way about Crossroads. And I want to see who does this better, okay?
Okay.
This is the challenge. Here's what I say to people about what's that book called? The Shack. There's a guy in his middle age. He's stiff-armed God. He's not too sure about life, etc. And anyway, long and the short of it is he goes on a camping trip. His 4-year-old daughter is abducted from the campground. I'm not sure what happens, but they inevitably find her blood-soaked dress in a shack in the middle of the woods, and she's obviously been murdered. Some time goes by. He's coping with this. All of a sudden, he goes out to the mailbox one stormy day and finds a note that says, "Meet me at the shack. Love, Papa." The mailman hasn't come yet. Who put this note in there? What kind of a sick person does this? Is it the murderer? And what do you mean, Papa? That's the insider language our family uses for God. This is weird. Packs up some camping stuff, takes a gun, and goes to meet whoever at this shack. And then a whole bunch of crazy God stuff happens. That's how I tell people about the shack.
I think that's great.
Did I do okay?
Yeah, better than me.
All right. I want you to hook people into the Crossroads. Go.
Okay. You got Tony, who's a successful business guy, pedal to the metal, doesn't care about how his choices ripple through the lives of others. He's got just wreckage in his wake, who ends up in a situation where he's in a coma. So he's caught between life and death. And in that place, he has to confront, or is invited, really, to confront all what he has done and all who he is. And it pushes him right back into relationships, particularly with people that he would not normally have associated or cared for. And this confrontation between his world and their world begins to erode at all the lies that existed since he was a child. And he has to face them. And so I get to explore some really cool stuff inside of that sort of journey. So
The Shack was the most spiritually healing book I have read in 20 years. how is this book gonna help Drew? I mean, there's not a lot of help out there for me.
There's more help than you think. And, you know, there's Pentecostals praying for you in languages they don't understand. So.
You just creeped me out, man. Thank you very much.
Back. So, you know, Crossroads, again, you get to explore in some ways deeper. Kim, who I'm married to, loves Crossroads more than she liked Bashak. Uh-huh. And it's because it gets to explore some places of your own heart, your own soul in deeper ways. And it acknowledges the antagonism that's essentially there in a lot of us. We don't know how to trust. And the journey to trust is a very arduous and difficult one. And it is a process, and it is a journey, as much as we would like to be fixed immediately. But, so, you know, I don't know. I don't write it with an agenda to, you know, to bring healing to Drew Marshall.
Yes,
I
mean, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
That would be too difficult to challenge. So I got to trust the Holy Spirit is bigger than you. So you
can know. Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
I want to thank you for The Shack, because actually, Drew, just like you, that was a very spiritually healing book for me. I'm good Pentecostal preacher's girl, and it took me a while to read The Shack. In fact, my mother would come to me for probably a year and said, have you read this book yet? And she read it 3 times, which floored me. I'm like, no, here's a great book. It's a great book. And she's like, you must, Kimberly dear, please, Kimberly. You need to read this book. And I put it off forever. And one day I saw it was laying there. I'm like, oh, this is it. I had the day off, and I drove myself down to a very secluded spot by the water, sat on a big old rock surrounded by water, and read the entire book.
Sitting on a rock?
Sat on a rock in front of the water and said, I'm not leaving this place until I've read this entire book.
Did you cry?
I absolutely cried.
The lake went up a little?
It did. It just, I can't even put it into words, but thank you, because it truly did something to me. So what I'm thinking now is that Crossroads, the book is right here in the studio.
Oh, she's going to boldly ask me for this book.
Do you think that Drew would notice if I walked out with it?
Drew doesn't notice much. That's what Paul's going to say. He doesn't notice much. So, Paul, is that numb? I have sat in many places and watched lineups of people come up to you and say what Kim has said, and that plus 10 or times 10, sobbing and hugging you and thanking you. And, and dude, I mean, you know, we all suffer from the law of diminishing returns. That's got to get a little old.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I think part of this is you begin to understand the depth and the magnificent uniqueness and the elegance that's in the design of each human being. And when something calls like that so deeply to them, and you get to be inside of that, you know, that's why I tell people I get to hang around burning bushes all day. You know, it's holy ground, and it never gets old, because I know that book, when I made my 15 copies at Office Depot, did everything I ever wanted it to do. I had no intentions of publishing it. I had no dreams about it or hopes or some kind of word or something. Those 15 copies did everything that mattered to me. So all of this is like, oh, I'm so thrilled to participate. If it went away, I'd be absolutely fine. But to be inside those kinds of stories, and it just grows. I mean, I'm in those stories all the time, as you saw, and it never gets old.
Okay.
You know, nobody says it. That person has never said that to you before.
Tell us a story, Uncle Paul.
Absolutely. Okay. So one that pops right to mind is I'm on a flight from not long ago from Boston to Portland. And it was unusual because it was a Alaska Airlines from Boston to Portland direct. And they're a Delta partner. And I fly Delta a lot. So I went up there and I said, could you change my miles over to Delta? No problem. And because I collect them, and then they sometimes bump me to first class. It's the coolest thing ever. So and then I said, oh, can you put me on a window? Because I'm 58 years old. I still like looking out the window. It still intrigues me. And and I'm fascinated by what I can see from there. And plus, it gives me a place to lean up against and fall asleep. And
instead of the smelly person beside you.
Well, sometimes that happens, you know, regardless. So I'm in this flight, and I want to be on the window, and they had, the Hachette, who'd taken me there to meet a book distributor in Boston, had paid for the flight, and they know that I like the window, and it's been a couple of years since I've been on an aisle. So I go up there, and I say, can you switch me to the window? They went, yeah, fine. I take about 10 steps away, and I get this check in my heart, so I turn around, and I signal to the gal who's talking to somebody else, and she looks up, and I say, take me off the list. Because you can get on this wish list to get a window because people like the aisles. And I turn around and I literally said out loud in this airport, I said, well, I wonder what that was about. Because there's no way that I wouldn't just say, put me on the window and let me stay there. Well, so now I'm kind of intrigued. What's going to happen? So I get on the flight. Actually, right before I get on the flight, I'm at Starbucks and I hear this voice behind me. Excuse me, are you Paul? This is the first time I'm in Logan Airport. Are you Paul Young? Yeah, you don't know me, but I saw you in an interview 2 years ago. You wrote The Shack, right? Yeah, yeah. He says, well, we have a good friend, Jim Henderson, in common. Oh, that's awesome. He's in Seattle. And so we start talking, and come to find out he was at a conference in Boston. He and his wife were there, so we chatted for about an hour. Well, we get in the flight. I'm sitting there. The only empty flight on the plane, from what I could see, was in the seat between me and the window. I'm on the aisle, row like 36, right? Way back. And
back by the screaming kids in the blue water.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So one of the last people to go on the flight is this young gal, a Harvard MBA student, on her first flight to Portland. And it turns out she's involved with a program that sort of does online publishing, right? So she said, what are you doing in Boston? I said, well, I'm here to meet a distributor, a book distributor. She says, oh, you're in the business. I said, yeah. She said, what do you do? I said, well, I wrote a couple little books. So this is recent. And she said, what did you write? I said, The Shack. She said, I haven't heard of that. So
You were so waiting. You were so waiting for her to go, Shack? You wrote The Shack?
I love it. I love it when people don't know. So she starts asking me questions. How did you get it published? Which started that whole wild, crazy story. So she was like over the moon about, how weird is this? Well, about 20 minutes into the flight, which is 4.5-hour, 5-hour flight, the couple that I had met in the airport outs me to the flight attendant, right? So they're like 10 rows up in front of me. And so when they're serving coffee, he says to her, have you ever heard of a book called The Shack? She says, oh, my gosh, that book changed my life. He says, well, did you know the author's on the flight? She goes, what? So he comes back with three flight attendants and introduces me, because all three of them have read the book. And so the gal sitting next to me on the window is kind of intrigued by, okay, well, this is not normal. And so the gal that she I was outed to, the first flight attendant, she kneels down in the row, in the aisle, and she starts to cry. And she says to me, I got to tell you what happened. She said, so a little over a year ago, my mom passed away, she says. And then a few months after that, my dad passed away unexpectedly. And he was sick for a couple of days. And I tried to get there in time because he and I had all this business that was undone. And so I tried to get there, and I didn't make it there in time. And he passed away. And somebody gave me a copy of The Shack, and it just totally changed the way that I processed through all of this. Mm. And about a month after I read it, she said, I had this vivid dream. And in my dream, I'm standing on the porch of The Shack, and Jesus comes out to the porch from inside, and he puts his arm around me, and he says, I wanted you to have one more conversation with your dad. He's waiting for you inside, but you need to know he doesn't know he's here yet. And So she goes in, she said, Paul, I spent an hour with my dad, and he was everything I had ever wanted him to be. She says, at one point I say to him, Dad, it's just so good to see you. And he turns to me and he says, well, why do you think I'm here? And she said, I walk out at the end of that hour, and it's done. Everything is done. And I wake up, and she's just on her knees in the aisle on this Delta flight, Alaska flight, and she's just sobbing. And for the next 4 hours, every time that these flight attendants would come by, even when they were talking to somebody else, they'd reach down, take my hand, and just hold on to it, or they'd lean over and give me a hug or whatever. I mean, how cool is that, right? So this young gal's blown away. We get to Portland. It's 11 o'clock at night on a Friday.
Okay, hold on. I got to interrupt, yeah. All right? Because first of all, you know, you're touching on emotions, mm-hmm. and I'm not cool with that, so I have to make a joke.
No, I get that.
Okay?
Yeah, please do.
How many years have I tried to get flight attendants to hold my hand?
Well, you know, you give off that narcissist.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm better now. Go ahead.
Well, we get to Portland, and I said, you know, I've got daughters the same age as you, and I would totally understand. She was planning to take the train downtown, and it was 11 at night. I said, would you allow me just to drive you? It's 10 minutes out of my way. But you got to help me find my car because I don't know where I left it in long-term parking. It's either in red or blue, but I can't remember. She says, great. She said, no problem. And so we go, and we have this great conversation. And she gives me a hug as she leaves, and she says, Powell's, you know, the big bookstore is just down here. I'll go down tomorrow. So I haven't heard the results of that, but that's a cool story.
Dude, and this is just one of 9,000 that have happened to you just this past year. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
do you remember me telling you about Scott Mitchell, the guy who was the therapist that sort of said,
oh, yeah.
Blue Park? You know, his dad just passed away a week ago. And so they asked if I would do something for the memorial. So that was really cool, too.
Wow. Wow.
To be able to do something for Scott's family.
Well, I like you.
I like you, too. Actually, I love you a lot. And I appreciate what you do. I appreciate the kind of conversations you have and the people that
sometimes you involve in that sometimes you appreciate that conversation.
Yeah, for the most part. You know, if you and I were both perfect, we'd probably appreciate each other all the time.
Yeah, so. We don't want that.
That's just
icky. Well, listen, folks, you want to go to a couple of websites here. We've got WM Paul Young. That's William Paul Young, wmpaulyoung.com, or crossroadsthebook.com, crossroadsthebook.com. And I got nothing else to say. Otherwise, it's going to get mushier, so I'm going to stop. Okay?
All right. All right, bud.
Paul, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
You know.
You're very welcome. You're great to meet you, Kimberly.
Nice to meet you.
When are you back up this way, by the way?
I am coming back up. I think it's October. David Peck's doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm coming up doing some things for World Vision.
Oh, good. David just co-hosted the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, you know, there's another guy I like a lot. And
do you like me more than him, though?
Well, you can't compare one child with another. David is a really cool magician. But you know that he grew up with Strombo?
Yeah. Because when you and I were down there, when you were on the show and I was
sitting
in the audience, there was that connection there. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, David and George couldn't believe it because he hadn't seen him for years.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Comes full circle. Hey, listen, we got to go out with a little bit of Mr. Coburn. What do you think?
Please do. I was wondering if he would show up.
Yeah, a little.
Have you seen the DVD? Have you seen the documentary?
Yeah.
Facing the Cage.
That's right. I introduced it during my television show that I used to do up here.
Yeah, baby.
We both love Bruce. We both love. Listen, this is turning into a love fest. Goodbye, Paul. Goodbye.
See ya, bud.
Goodbye.
All right, folks. Mr. Paul Young.
Answer if you can.
And Bruce singing one of my favorite songs. Blind Willie Johnson sang this back in the 30s, and Bruce covered this, and he just nails it. Anyway, stay with us. I think we'll finish this song out. Soul of a Man by Bruce Coburn. And when we come back, some more great tunes on The Drew Marshall Show.
I saw a crowd stand talking. Just came up in time. Was teaching the lawyers and the doctors that a man ain't nothing but his mind. Won't somebody tell me? Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me. Tell me what is the soul of a man. I really I can understand is nothing but a burning light. Well, won't somebody tell me? Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me. Tell me, what is the soul of a man? Stood amazed, was teaching the lawyers and the doctors how to raise a man from the grave. Well, won't somebody tell me? Answer if you can. I want somebody to tell me. Tell me, what is the soul of a man?
Whether you're in your smart car avoiding Hummers or you're in your house avoiding the J-Dubs, there's no avoiding us, The Drew Marshall Show, live through our website and right here on Joy 1250.